things they're seeing in factory farms. And so corporations are being forced to change. But too often what happens instead of real change is they put up the appearance of change. So Smithfield changed its motto to good food, responsibly raised. They claim they stopped using gestation crates. In 2017, we went into their single largest facility, Circle 4 Farms in Utah, and found that they were continuing to use gestation crates despite the fact that they had told the public that they had stopped using that. But instead of trying to address the corporate fraud, the systematic cruelty at the farm, the Utah government brought prosecutions against six activists, including a retired woman named Diane Gandy Sorby, who has no criminal record, spends most of her life and most of her time taking care of abused animals in sanctuaries and shelters. And we're seeing this happening across the country right now.
We're going to do part two of this discussion to find out more about these actions with Wayne Shung and Priya Sahane, co-founders of Direct Action Everywhere. Go to democracynow.org for details. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Libby Rainey, Carla Wills. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermin Sheikh.
This is KBOO Portland. It's coming up on 8 o'clock, at which time we have voices from the edge or something like it. Meanwhile, dig these important messages from around your community.
Don't worry. I won't hurt you. I only want you to have some hope.
Dearly beloved.
Yes, come ride your bike and dance the night away on Friday, June 7th at 8 p.m. as we celebrate Prince's birthday with a mobile bicycle dance party. Roll around Portland with Diablo as we rock Pedal Palooza, dropping the Prince jams all night long, stopping to dance along the way. Again, that's Prince's birthday celebration on Friday, June 7th at 8 p.m., beginning at his mural on 42nd and Prescott. More information can be found on the KB website under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2019 Juneteenth celebration on Saturday, June 22nd from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Clark College Hanna Hall in Vancouver, Washington. The theme of the 7th annual Juneteenth celebration is Together We Rise. This theme addresses the idea that together we rise above the fray of hatred, despair, and discord. The celebration features a job fair, panels, awards, contests, an art gallery, live entertainment, and more. Again, that's the 2019 Juneteenth celebration on Saturday, June 22nd from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Clark College Hanna Hall, 1933 Fort Vancouver Way in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
All right. Thanks for joining us this morning. This is KBOO's News and Public Affairs Block, which you hear every weekday from 7 a.m. to noon. We just heard Democracy Now! Now we're going to hear, well, we have a special encore presentation of a conversation that KBOO's own and Portland's own Commissioner Joanne Hardesty in a conversation with young activists schooling other young people and helping other young people to educate themselves on legal matters of pressing importance. Here it is.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Voices from the Edge. I am your host, Joanne Hardesty, and it is my pleasure this morning to bring a group of students that I've had the pleasure of working with over the last 7 weeks on a project called Youth and the Law. And I'm going to have you go around and individually introduce yourself, and if you would say your name, what school you go to, that should be sufficient. I'll start with you, Jasmine.
My name is Jasmine. I go to Roosevelt High School.
Hello, my name is Anthony. I just graduated from Roosevelt High School, and I'm going to Pomona College down in California.
My name is Sky, and I am in Roosevelt.
My name is Angel. I just graduated from Roosevelt High School, and I will be going to PSU.
Excellent. Welcome to all of you. And so, you know, we've been hanging out for 7 weeks, so we know each other well. So we should let our listening audience know, what is the mission of this project that we took on? Jasmine, I'll let you answer that.
Pretty much the whole mission is to really empower youth using this tool that we've created and are going to create. It's mainly, the purpose is to empower them and to educate them on their rights so they're more confident to go out in the community and encounter police in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. And Angel, tell us about the tool is geared for a specific demographic group. Who's that?
So we're mainly focused on incoming freshmen. And now what we created our tool is kind of to appeal to them, mm-hmm. make it easier for them to understand it. We're kind of going towards a comic book aspect of it. And each of us are focused on a specific scenario, and each of us are doing our own art.
Mm-hmm. And so, Sky, talk about why you're so committed to this project. And let me tell the listening audience. So there were 8 students assigned initially. 7 of them have been through the entire process. And we have 1 more week to go. And so, Sky, tell me why you're so passionate about this project.
Well, I've been involved with Youth and the Law. It's kind of been a big project that's been happening for a couple years. And it started off in a classroom I was in. So I guess I have history with it, but it's also super important to me that we teach youth their rights, because it's not something we're really taught in class, but we all have those rights. And if you go into the world not knowing them, you can really end up being hurt by just about anyone. Mm-hmm. So I feel like to make people feel safe, we should start teaching them like when they're freshmen in high school. Mm-hmm. So...
Excellent. Yeah. So, Anthony, tell us about how this tool, how do you envision this tool being used? And first, we should say, I mean, we started off calling it a tool because I didn't want to influence right. what you guys developed, right? And so it's not a tool anymore. We know exactly what it is, right? Mm-hmm. And so, Anthony, tell us exactly what it is that we've developed and then why you are so passionate about this project.
So the tool, as it stands today, is a combination of 2 things. First and foremost, it's training. We'll have facilitators, and we will bring people in, and we will teach them about their rights. We will go through the scenarios. As Angel mentioned, we'll look at the comic book, and a lot of it will just be discussion-based, so people can voice their concerns, mm-hmm. voice their personal experiences, and ask any questions they need.
Right. But now, we don't call things comic books anymore, right? That was like, that's well, my demographic group,
graphic
right?
Novel.
Thank you,
novel.
Thank you. I was going to say, yeah, I was calling it a comic book, and you guys looked at me like, what? Okay, so it's a graphic novel, and the graphic novel, the plan is to put this graphic novel in the hands of every incoming freshman correct. In Portland Public School starting in September, right?
Right.
And then we have a plan to actually train their parents. Who wants to talk about that plan?
So,
okay, Anthony.
So I think the plan is so the putting it in the hands of the freshmen is kind of to get the conversation going.
Right. To start it, basically.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then that training is supposed to now bring in the adults in those people's lives mm-hmm. To participate in the conversation with them. Mm-hmm. So the idea is hopefully the freshmen will some. Kind of have some sort of prior knowledge, at least based on the publication, and then we can get their parents to, because I think they're an important part right. of the education of that those types of things.
That's right.
So yeah, I think it's really just starting the conversation with the publication, and then kind of following it through with the training.
And of course, we've all seen the videos nationally about people being killed and harmed and their interactions with law enforcement. And so I think that we are feeling a sense of urgency to make sure that we can provide young people with a tool that will keep them safe. And in fact, the program started at Roosevelt because of an experience with a student at Roosevelt. Who wants to share that?
I can.
All right, go ahead, Jessica.
Originally, it was in October 2014, and a student at our school, Tiger Rule, he was tased and beat by police officers, and it was all caught on video, and it kind of went viral around the school, especially on Facebook. And so our mock trial teacher, Ms. Fisher, she decided to scrap her entire curriculum for the last semester of the school year 2 years ago, my freshman year, and create this book called Youth in the Law. And that's kind of where this whole project started.
Wonderful. And so I think our production will be the third Youth in the Law production. Is that correct?
Something like that. We've been going through so much with revising. It's a little complex.
It looks like we have a caller on the line. Good morning, Brian. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hey, Joanne. It's Brian.
Good morning, Brian.
Good. How are you guys doing today?
Great.
We're good.
Good. Listen, so, you know, I'd like to be the first one on the radio to definitely say, from my generation, I'm 57, so I'm like just in the baby boomer thing. I'd like to express my apology to all of y'all. And, you know, I think it should come to a from this generation to putting you through all this, you guys spending your summer having to worry about dealing with a scenario of the police invading your rights and your privacy and possibly killing you. I really, really, from my generation, I'm totally ashamed of them. You know, and unfortunately, I am part of that generation, so I have to take some responsibility for it. And that's exactly where it stops. I was just born in that age. But, you know, from my generation to your generation, I do apologize. And, you know, most of us thinking people of my age are ashamed of themselves. And I think at some point when you guys get older and take power, you need to remind us always how ashamed we should be of ourselves, because we have definitely screwed up your schools, and we've also taken a lot of energy from you, you know, so, because you have to walk around in a hyper-aware state at all times, worried about getting shot on the streets of the United States of America.
Right.
And as Abby Hoffman would put it, that's America with a K. So listen, my best, and no joking, my best to you, and I really do hope you upend this generation of people who bought into Reagan and cut their hair and did all that stupid stuff, you know. So I really do hope you you know, upend this, and I hope you do it in the civil way that you guys know how to do it. But you guys take care.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Appreciate your call. Have a great day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I am speaking with the majority of my Youth in the Law class, who we've been hard at work for the last 7 weeks developing what we hope will be useful tools to keep incoming freshmen in the Portland Public Schools safe and their encounters with police, as well as a training curriculum to train their parents so that their parents will also understand their rights. Now, what I found interesting in this process is you got a lot of advice from adults when we started this process, right? Because we brought a lot of people in to talk to you. And many adults wanted you to have the message that it was young people's responsibility to de-escalate situations when they've been stopped or encountered by a police officer. How did you feel about that, and what did you do with that information? Angel?
So for me, I felt that youth are not the one that's supposed to de-escalate the situation. The police are better trained, better armed, and they're the ones that have all this many years of experience, so they should be the ones to be at the front of it and be the ones to de-escalate everything.
Absolutely. Anybody else want to add anything to that?
I'd like to say that I agree with Angel, but it is still such a difficult thing to think about and discuss because we're talking about two human beings. You can never control what another one does, which, like, as a teenager, I know it's hard for me to control my emotions and control myself, especially when I'm afraid.
Yes.
And when I've been forced to be afraid of police.
That's right.
I can't imagine that it's more difficult when you're 30 years my senior and you see me, obviously, with less power. How is it always my responsibility? But I also feel like it does have to be my responsibility because that's what I've been taught. So it's hard for me to tell another teenager, okay, go ahead, show your emotions, you'll be fine, because that's not true.
Right.
It's trying to balance, do we want kids to be safe or do we want them to be real?
Right.
Which, it's so hard and it's scary.
And that has been, I think, the biggest challenge for us, right, is because we don't, I agree with Angel and you, Sky, that it is not appropriate for us to expect the young people to be more adult than the well-trained professionals. I mean, I think that's a ludicrous proposition. However, we also have all seen the videos and we've seen what happens when police officers are fearful of the people that they're encountering. And we know how quickly a traffic stop or an encounter with the police can lead to deadly results, right? And so we know that. So our goal has been really to try to balance making sure that people have good information about their rights, but not be so assertive that it could potentially cause harm to them or death, right? And so I think we've done a good job of balancing that, but it just amazed me that so many adults think it's okay to tell young people, if you just act right, then everything will be fine. I'm appalled by that. And we do have a caller on the line, so we're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Anne. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
So I wanted to address what the previous caller said and also to talk about the Black Lives Matter platform.
Okay.
Which I guess is related to schools and the police.
Okay.
So he apologized, and I'm not sure how old he is, but he sounded like he was old.
He said 57. And that's not old.
Yeah, I'm 52. White people need to do more than apologize. Mm. He was putting it on the kids. He said, you know, I hope you do this, I hope you do that. We are responsible to do it. And we have to do it in a way that isn't dominant. We have to follow the Black leadership. And we have to dismantle the system as well, if not more so. And so I met with some people last night, and we actually read parts, not all of it, but the headings and the demands of the Black Lives Matter movement, our platform. And we all came, we were white people. We came away energized because even if you just look at the table of contents, that is what, I'll speak for myself, that is what I want this country to be. This is what, I think this is what this country was meant to be. And once again, the Black people have done all the hard work and formulated this platform, and I want to ask, tell all of your white listeners to read that platform. Read it, understand it, do what you can to help implement it, because it is amazing. It's a blueprint for the future. That's all I have to say.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. Bye.
Have a good day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. What would you consider success out of this project? I'm going to go around and ask each of you this, and I'm going to start with Jasmine.
You know, I think since a lot of youth are tied between, you know, standing up for their rights or just doing what the officer says when they're interacting with police and when they're stopped, they cannot, they're kind of like troubled to choose between one or the other, especially when they're stopped and they're in that moment. They have to stop and think, wait, am I going to do this or am I going to do this?
That's right.
And so we want to kind of help them make the decision, the right decision, mm-hmm. where they can assert their rights and where they can stand up for themselves, but in a safe way, because they don't want to get harmed by police. So I think that if we know that youth feel confident enough to do that mm-hmm. after using our product and going to our workshops and using our graphic novel, I think that's when we know when we've succeeded, because people are actually having those conversations and they feel a lot more safe in the streets encountering police.
Excellent. How about you, Anthony?
Well, that's a hard question to answer. But I feel that one of the biggest problems in those videos that we see is that there's a lot of fear and anxiety
yes.
On the side of youth with any police interaction.
That's right.
So it's hard to think clearly when you're fearing for your life.
That's right.
So you run or you fight back or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that we can undo, you know, a whole childhood of learning that police are bad. But I think that starting the conversation and teaching them the rights can help to give them a little bit of confidence, mm-hmm. make them feel more comfortable, and hopefully give them the tools that they need to make themselves even a little bit more safe. Mm-hmm. And I think eventually having them feel that new sense of confidence will help in the long run.
Thank you. How about you, Sky?
Well, I agree with everything that's been said, especially with the giving youth their confidence, mm-hmm. especially when you're going into high school as a freshman, you're scared for like every reason to be scared.
Right. So you're a bit overwhelmed, aren't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the one that seems to be the real issue to your safety is encountering law enforcement, because you've never done it before,
right.
but it's very real now. You're starting to get into stuff that could warrant that when you're in high school.
That's right.
So if we see these interactions result in students feeling confident when they interact with police mm-hmm. and having probably a better relationship with police, mm-hmm. if we can see that in our community, starting with Roosevelt or starting in Portland, hopefully we can see this project grow beyond this city mm-hmm. and impact the rest of the nation, mm-hmm. because to me, success is seeing an improved relationship between youth and police, mm-hmm. and we need youth to feel safe first. We need that fear to be diminished.
Yes. Excellent. How about you, Angel?
For me, I feel like we've succeeded when we make teens, kind of like how Sky mentioned, get rid of that fear or like diminish it, and make, because of that, they're going to feel a little bit more confident whenever they're having an interaction with police, mm-hmm. and kind of like that would better the relationship they have. And I feel like that's when we know that we've succeeded, because they're able to take our tool, kind of learn from it, and feel more safe, or feel more kind of like, I don't know how to put it, but like more comfortable.
What we know about especially freshman boys is that they like to front, right? Mm-hmm. They like to show that they're tough, and they like to show that they know it all, and you know, just how boys grow, right? And knowing that, it's really important that they have good, useful tools that actually are legal. And help them be able to think their way through situations with the cops. And Anthony, you know I'm going to do this. I'm going to have you tell the story about coming back from your ride-along. I make Anthony tell this story wherever we go, because I think it's a perfect example of what could have happened without having some already pre-knowledge of your rights and how you should interact with law enforcement officers. So, okay, Anthony, go.
Okay. As Joanne mentioned, I went on a 6-hour ride-along with a Portland police officer about 2 weeks ago. And I would first like to say that I had a very positive experience. At no point during the ride-along did I feel unsafe or threatened. But after the ride-along was a different story. So what happened was we were done with our ride-along. The officer dropped me off at the MLK precinct. I shook his hand. I asked for his business card. We said goodbye, good night to each other, and we went our separate ways. So my car was parked across the street from the precinct, not very far. I could see it from where he dropped me off. And in that time, from me walking to where he dropped me off to my car, I was stopped by about 3 different police officers, one of which was two of which were in a car together, an unmarked police car. I did not know they were police until they stepped out of the car. But I had seen them driving slowly next to me for a little while, and I didn't make eye contact because, you know, I thought they were just, you know, some crazy people or something. And so finally they made the decision to come and confront me, so they drove up a little faster, drove up beside me, and they started to get out of the car. And then they asked, what are you doing in this parking lot? And so I just told them, you know, oh, well, an officer just dropped me off. I was on a ride along. And then afterwards they were like, oh, okay, great. And then they got back in their car and they said goodnight and they went on their way. Maybe a few steps later, after those people had driven off, another police officer comes and says, what are you doing out this late? And once again, I repeat the same thing. Oh, well, an officer just dropped me off. I was on a ride along. And he said, okay, good night. And he left me on my way. Mm-hmm. And so I get in the car. And I think the biggest thing was once I got in the car, it kind of hit me what the situation I was in. Like, what if they hadn't believed me? What if I wasn't calm enough mm-hmm. to express why I was there? Mm-hmm. What if I didn't have any proof? Mm-hmm. You know, all these things went through. What if I was so scared that I just ran? Mm-hmm. So all these things went through my mind. Like, what if I wasn't mentally able to handle that situation like I did? Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it's so important that we give these kids a little bit more confidence talking with police. Because I had been talking with police for 4 weeks, and right. I had just been on a ride-along where I had, right. like, lunch with, like, 7 police officers. Right. So I feel like that helped me a lot, and that situation could have been really bad for me, and luckily it wasn't. But
absolutely. Thank you for sharing that story. And it is a perfect example of how quickly a situation could go from being very calm to being escalated into something that causes harm or death to someone. Mm-hmm. I wonder what that situation would have been like had you not been spending all this time focused on your rights and focused on how community members engage with the police. I wonder how that situation would have turned out. But I am thankful that it turned out well. but it's a great example. And one of the things that we know that we targeted in on is the places where young people first experience police, right? And for most of you, your entire education experience, you've had school resource officers in your elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so the first time young people encounter police could possibly be inside the school building, because most schools have a school resource officer assigned there.
Absolutely.
And so we know TriMet is another place that young people encounter police. We know shopping malls are a place where young people encounter police or security acting it like police. Mm-hmm. And so our goal was to make sure that our scenarios covered as many of the areas as young people would encounter police officers. So I guess the next question is, our plan is to actually conduct some trainings next year, very specifically throughout the Portland School District area. And so I'm looking forward to that. I guess the question that I have now, we're going to have Police Chief Mike Marshman in our class at 9:30 this morning. What are the questions that you're going to have for our new police chief? What do you think?
I got one.
Okay.
Like you kind of mentioned before, we've talked to a lot of adults.
Yes.
And they've kind of recanted the same mantra, just like, oh, do everything the police says, right. be calm, right. and you'll be fine.
Right.
And I think, we know that that's not true.
Right.
Like, maybe you could have been able to say that 2 years ago. Mm. But we know that that's not true. We still see people do everything right, and they end up dead at the end of the encounter.
Right.
So I guess asking them that inevitable question and giving that inevitable answer mm-hmm. and pushing them on that mm-hmm. and just seeing how they react, mm-hmm. I think will be kind of fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the conversation. You got a specific question, Angel, that you think you want to ask Portland Police Chief Mike Marshman today?
Yeah, I feel so if you're undocumented and a police officer goes to your house, what are the specific procedures you have to follow when you're talking to them so you don't get yourself in trouble and you don't get yourself deported? That's probably like a big question I want to ask.
That's a big one. And you're going to be asking the right person. Jasmine Sky, you guys got a big question that you want to ask the chief?
I kind of want to ask, I don't have a very specific question about it, but I want to ask about like the culture of Portland policing. Because, you know, you've got a group of people together, they have their own culture. And I want to know about how it affects the way they interact with those that are not police, both inside the precinct, in their uniforms, and out. I want to know if their being a police officer has impacted the way they see the world, even when they take off their badge and uniform, just to see, you know, who they are as a person versus what they would have been like if they weren't a police officer, right. If that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. And so it brings me back to a conversation we had with Captain Kevin Modica. What did he say? Do you remember what he said? That at least for me, it like reinforced for me, oh, yeah, we're living in America. Remember, he made this statement about his uniform. Remember it?
Yes. He said that when he takes off his uniform, he's just another black man in America. And in that way, he can feel targeted by police.
And did, was that, I mean, for me, I thought, talk about brutal honesty. He was probably, in my opinion, and I want to ask you guys, the best police officer we talked to, because I just felt that he was so honest and open, even about things that were hard. Did you guys agree with that?
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. And so we're hopeful that we'll get Chief Mike Marshman to be in as open a mood as Modica was. And we're going to invite Modica back, because I think he probably did the best job, I think, of... and what did he... Oh, what was the statement that he made, right? Remember the statement that he made, especially after the killing...
Philando Castile.
Yeah.
Kind of like we said, we asked him that question, well, what do you tell kids? And he said, well, honestly, I don't even know anymore.
Yes.
You know, I would have told them, do everything right. You know,
that's right.
And stuff like that. But now everyone can hold up this video and be like, well, it didn't turn out great for him.
Right.
So even him, he didn't really have a lot to tell us about.
And it was like the week after that happened, right?
Yeah, it was very close.
When he came in, it was like really close. So it was really, I mean, I thought that was, talk about brutal honesty, to have a police officer say, I don't know what to tell you, right? And did that put a lot more pressure on you guys to... I think that was a yes, right? To come up with a tool that you would be comfortable would help people stay safe, right? Just not realizing that here's a police officer that says, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And so for our listeners, if you've just joined the conversation, I am speaking with some students who've been part of a Youth in the Law project this summer. And by the way, they are part of a Summer Works program. So I one of our earlier callers thought that I had locked you guys in a room somewhere and wouldn't let you out. But no, you're actually being fully employed this summer. And we have been tasked with creating this project. And so if you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And so two of you will be off to college next year. Tell me how this project impacts your movement into the next level of your education.
Well, me personally, I'm going to Los Angeles. Well, not
right
Los
outside
Angeles.
Of Los Angeles.
Yeah, very close to Los Angeles. And I recognize that is going to be a very different culture than the one I am in, and I might encounter some things where I feel like injustices are being done to me or my rights are being violated. And so I think it's important for me to learn about these things so that I can handle myself well and stay safe. And I also think that, I mean, I'm going to a small private school, so there's going to be a lot of people who don't really look like me.
Right.
And I think it's important that we are able to impart that knowledge to other people who may not really need to experience these things and at least voice that type of struggle that we're going through on a daily basis.
Right.
So that, like the caller said, people in power can step up and say something.
Right. How about you, Angel?
So, like, for me, I'm going to be going to PSU, so I'm going to be staying local. But what I've recently learned, or what you recently told us, is that they're going to be arming the staff, or, like, not the staff, but the security. Yeah, the security at PSU. So being out in the streets and getting an education is still going to be dangerous, or, like, you're still going to have that fear that, he might not be trained good enough, and that security guard, and that's going to be really, like, the fear aspect that I'm going to have.
And so for you that are going back to high school, you're gonna actually be in a position to really help kind of lead this education program, right? Because you're gonna be in the schools where you can help us make these happen. So how do you see yourselves being involved and engaged in the new school year with this project?
Well, I'm going into my junior year of high school, and I've been involved with the Youth and Law Project since my freshman year, since, like I said, like the beginning of the second semester of my freshman year, and now that I'm going to be a junior, you know, these past 2 years have gone by really fast, but I've been so involved with the project, you know, after school, going to all these events and advocating for the project and talking about it with strangers all over the city, you know, and I'm really excited to see where this takes me. I want to pursue a career in law, and I think that some of all the work that I've done in this project is going to help me kind of have this new lens when I do eventually go into college or when I do eventually get a job.
Right.
I think this is going to help me a lot, and so I think that just my involvement so far and my involvement in the future is really going to help me, and I'm really excited for it.
All right, how about you, Sky?
I'm in the same boat as Jasmine. I've been working on this project for as long as it's been a thing, and I've been doing all the work outside of class with it, talking to people. I went to talk to the mayor and commissioners, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm going into my senior year, and Anthony and Angel have told me about the senior inquiry class, and I'm so excited to take it because it's a focus on social justice. And, like, obviously, I spent my whole summer on it. I'm pretty well versed in that. But I'm really excited to bring it back to that class because, like, we're going to be talking about racism in that class. Now I can talk about the law aspect of that with a lot of confidence and knowing that, you know, we'll be giving this tool to freshmen, but all of that information is still in me. And all of my peers who are going to be heading off to college in a year need that information even more urgently because they got a late start. So I'm just excited to educate my peers and be a leader in the senior inquiry class.
All right. Yeah, I'm gonna have you guys talk about that class because from what you guys have told me, that's the class to take in high school.
Yeah, for sure.
We've got some callers on the line, so we're gonna go back to the phone line. Good morning, George. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, good morning, young people.
Good morning.
I have a question for you. I imagine some cities are safer for black folks than others. And I just wondered, I like to think well of Portland, and I just wonder where you put Portland in the scheme of things. I think it's better than Ferguson or Baltimore. Now, how do you see it?
Good question.
That's a big question.
Wow. You guys want to try to tackle that?
Well, I'd like to say that in my view, personally, I see Portland as almost three different cities. I'm in a bubble of North Portland where everyone's as diverse. I go to Roosevelt High School, the most diverse school in the state. You know, everybody looks like me. So I might feel a lot safer in that neighborhood than if I went to Southeast. To answer your question, I don't really know. But I feel like, It's going to be unsafe wherever I go because I'm in America. And I agree with you that some is safer than the other. But as far as Portland goes, yeah, they're almost three different cities in my eyes.
Wow, very interesting. What I would say to you is to the Portland Police Bureau releases traffic and pedestrian stop data on an annual basis. And here's what we know. We know that if you're African American, you're four times as likely to be stopped by Portland police. We know that if you're stopped, you're twice as likely to be searched. And we know that if you're searched, you're half as likely as white Portlanders to have guns, drugs, and other paraphernalia on you. We know that the gang enforcement unit stops African Americans. 44% of their stops are of African Americans in a city where the population of African Americans are 9%. And so we may not be Ferguson, which means we may not be killing black people in the street on a regular basis, but it certainly doesn't mean that we are any better at not targeting black people for over-policing and for severe consequences.
Well, I hear you. There's plenty of bias to go around, huh?
Well, and let me give you one more report, because all these things you can look up for yourself, so you don't actually have to take my word for it. A RED report came out recently, which was the Racial Equity Report in Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, that showed you're 600 times more likely to be charged with a crime in Multnomah County if you're African American. So all that data is available online, and you don't have to take my word for it, but I can tell you that even though we pretend that we're progressive here in the Portland area, we're nowhere near being progressive. We haven't made it there yet.
Interesting. And Joanne, I would never doubt your word.
Well, anyway, I always want people...
good work.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I just always want to give people the ability to... Don't take my word. Check it out for yourself. But I'll tell you where
I shall indeed. Take care, gang. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye now.
Joanne, you're always the one with the numbers.
It's because I've been doing this for a little while, you know? That guy, when you guys thought that guy was old at 57, I kept my mouth shut. We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, John. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joanne, and courageous young people.
Good morning.
And I'm 69 years old, and hey, I love young people. I think your generation is wonderful, and I'm so proud of you. You and millennials for getting a political movement going. You're getting involved.
Yes.
You're voting. Remember, you can register to vote if you're going to be 18 by, November 8th, I think.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and now with Motor Voter, you get automatically registered once at the DMV.
And I want to congratulate you for your courage to be leaders, because it takes guts to be leaders to help other people. I remember when I was in high school, junior high, I just wanted to go along with the group because I, you know, wanted to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, I'm so proud of you. And keep up the great work. And we can change this society if we have young people like you that'll step forward and with courage. And also, I would like to hear how, when you're stopped by the cops, what do you recommend? I always try to use that word officer, you know, to say, hey, I respect you as an officer of the law, and go from there and see what you think. Give me some feedback. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. Bye-bye. Appreciate the love. Have a good day.
Thank you.
And so that's a good question. So what's our recommendations when somebody's stopped by the police? And of course, it depends on whether they're walking or whether they're in an automobile or whether they're in a crowd. There are different dynamics. So give him one alternative, one of our scenarios. No one?
I got one.
Of course you do.
Yeah. I'll talk all day.
Knows,
if you
right? That's right.
In my eyes, the rule of thumb is stay safe, but keep your dignity. Mm. For me, if I'm ever in a situation with the police, I want to be respectful to that officer, but I also don't want to put my rights at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think another piece of good advice is to end the interaction as soon as possible.
Mm.
If you see a way out, then you take it.
Right.
And
what's the magic questions? Am I free to go? Am I being detained?
Exactly.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And so if you're not driving an automobile, you're under no obligation to engage a police officer at any time.
Correct.
And dialogue and conversation. No matter how nicely they approach you, you are not obligated to talk to them. And you guys know that we've affirmed that with police officers throughout the time we've been developing this curriculum. And of course, most young people don't know that. They're taught that, you know, when an authority figure approaches you, then you answer their questions, you know, you do what they tell you to do, right? But in a society where you are not safe in interacting with police, it is a much better approach to just not even engage. And by asking those two questions, am I free to go? And if they say yes, get the heck out of Dodge. If they say no, then the next question is, am I being detained? Mm-hmm. And if they say yes, then of course the logical question is why, right? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you want a parent or a guardian before you say any other word.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that for the last caller to know is that we also know that it's vital to have community members watch the police. And so when an encounter happens, you want to talk about that, Jasmine?
Yeah, I was going to say, we've talked a lot about a police accountability, and we had members from the ACLU come in and talk about the mobile justice app that they have. And so if you're in a group with a group of friends, or even if you're just by yourself, ask the police officer if you have permission to film them. Mm-hmm. Because if you download the mobile justice app, it's free. You get to record that, and as soon as your phone is shut off, or as soon as you stop the recording, it's immediately sent to the ACLU, and they're able to view that footage. Mm-hmm. And also, I think filing police reports, asking for their business card after the encounter is always a good idea, because you can file a police report. And even though Joanne doesn't like him that much, you can take it to IPR, and they'll review your report there. And even if it doesn't do something immediately,
right,
another person's report on top of yours could eventually do something with that officer. So if you do have a negative encounter, always try and voice what happened to, you know, get justice for that.
Absolutely. And it's not that I don't like IPR. I would love IPR if they actually investigated all the complaints that came in their door. But since they have a record of tossing out 74% of the complaints, and they've actually bettered that number, now it's only 69% that they toss out, right? Effective as to their new report. And so it is, to me, it is inexcusable that that is the only oversight system that we have in place, and that they just routinely decide that certain people don't matter and don't deserve justice in an oversight system. Hmm. So unlike is harsh. I hate them because they don't do the job that they are supposed to do. So just so you know, we're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Francis. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hi. I agree with you, Joanne. I think it's wonderful that these young people are doing this. And I think it's also amazing that in the United States of America that young people have to do this.
Yes.
And that they're dealing with people who are supposed to be taking an oath to uphold the Constitution and to protect and serve.
Right.
And it's been my experience with the young people that I know in my life that their stops, their racial profiling occurred before they even entered high school.
Right.
They were still in middle school, and it happened in their own neighborhood.
Yes.
And it wasn't anything to do with any institution. It was walking down the street in their own community.
Mm-hmm.
I would like somebody to ask the police chief what he thinks of that, the fact that there's young people having to train themselves on how to be wiser and calmer and behave more
adult than the
adults, like, right, than the adults that they encounter, and how he feels about that. How, why does he think that is happening? Why is it necessary for young people to have to do this in the United States of America? What, and the fear factor is the police,
yes,
and how they behave.
Right.
And I would like to know what a young person should do, or if anyone's talked about when they know their rights and assert their rights, and or if they're approached at gunpoint, what are they still able to assert their rights, or do they just, you know, realize there's a gun pointing at them and they better just do whatever that man says? Mm. And also, if when you ask if I'm being detained and they say yes, and then you say why, and the response is, well, there's been some robberies in the neighborhood and we're just checking things out. So, okay, does the child or the young person then say, well, I didn't do it, so I'm leaving? Or can they even say that?
Well, they should say if they are being if they have asked, "Am I free to go?" and the answer is no, because we're investigating some robberies. Then the next question is, "Am I being detained?"
And right. if they say yes,
and if they say yes, then the next words out of that young person's mouth should be, "You need to contact my parent or guardian. I don't have anything else to say to you."
Now, do you think the police will cooperate with that?
I think the police are required to cooperate with that, because that is, in fact, everybody's right to not talk to a police officer. And so when you say, I want to talk to my parent or guardian so that they can get me a legal advice, the police officer is required to stop asking you questions. And then at that point, the police officer has to make a decision. Do I have enough information to make an arrest, or am I going to have to let this person go?
And so, that's something I would really like to ask the police chief about, if that's how it really happens.
Well, we will ask them today.
Okay.
We'll
sure.
see them in Great. Just a little while.
Okay.
In 40
you guys
minutes.
Take care.
Thank you.
All right, appreciate what you're doing. You take care.
Thank you, Francis. Am I going to see you at the conference this weekend?
Yes, that's the plan after Keaton's vigil.
Yes, I will see you at the vigil.
He was approached at gunpoint, by the way.
I'm sorry?
He was approached at gunpoint.
Oh, well, yeah.
Before, you know.
Yes,
so,
yes.
You know, there we go.
All right.
Anyway.
Thank you.
See you later.
See you
Bye-bye.
Then. And the conference I'm talking about is the Northwest Community Coalition for Police Accountability Conference that starts Friday evening at 5 p.m. at Portland State University, runs all day Saturday. Our first action will be going to the Keep Notice Vigil that happens from 6 to 7 on Northeast 6th and Halsey, the exact corner where Keep Notice was killed by Portland police on May 12, 2010. We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Don. Welcome to K-Boot.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
Hey, I had a question for Anthony, but I wanted to just echo what you said about the IPR, that they are a useless, worthless organization.
Yes, they are.
And I'll give you an example. In 2010, in Halloween, at 4:30 in the afternoon, two guys came. They were following me around. I was campaigning for medical marijuana dispensaries. They kept following me around all day, and they ran me down. They flew around the corner, and three witnesses saw them run me down. The cops didn't ticket them. They falsified the report. They lied about the insurance number. And, you know, the IPR, I called the IPR and I just talked to him. I said, well, you know, what are my choices? And they sent me an application. I never opened it. And they did a four-month investigation. They never called me once and sent me a report saying that the cop didn't do anything wrong.
Oh, yes.
And so it's just, they're pathetic.
Yes.
But anyway, Anthony, hey, I wanted to ask you, were the three cops that did that to you, were they white cops?
Yes. Yes, okay. They were white cops.
Okay. Hey, I agree with that lady there, the other young lady who said that you need to... you know, here's an example where you probably should put some kind of report in writing, because you never know when those cops are going to come out and kill somebody of color or one of us guys with disabilities, because that's the other group gets targeted, even though we tend to die in custody more often than we die out on the streets by the cops. But, you know, I was listening to, I'm going to tell you about a show about a year and a half ago on Think Out Loud on the OPB station. They put on this, what they said was their... the best cop in Portland, Jason Jones. He wasn't the cop you rode with, was he?
No, he was not.
Okay. Well, he was a. They put him on the show, and they were saying he was the guy who normally takes him around. He's the best cop, and this guy Dave Miller starts interviewing him. And during the interview, he says, "Well, I look for guys who are African American guys who are between 18 and 25 wearing dark clothes." He said, "That's the people I tend to mostly." Stop and frisk in question. And he admitted that on Dave Miller's show, you know, and I wrote that they threw in my shed over all of my stuff. Somebody did it a few weeks ago, and they just came in here and just tossed it.
Well, just...
I'm telling you, man, I've written to the FBI, Blumenauer. Every day, about
so
20 times.
I got a suggestion. Why don't you give my engineer your phone number, and I'll give you a call when we're off the air, okay?
Yeah, can you call me later this afternoon, okay?
Yes, I can.
I'm excited about this right now, but I'll do that.
Tell the engineer what time's a good time to call you, and I'll call you later this afternoon.
All right.
Have a good day.
Thanks,
sir. Okay, bye. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Looks like we're getting minus on minutes. We've just got a few minutes left. There are a couple of critical things that I wanted to make sure that we covered, and I just had a senior moment and don't remember what they are. And so that means I leave it up to you. What would you want the listening audience to know most about this project? Jasmine, I'll start with you. Or anybody else who wants to go first. How about you, Angel?
I wanted to know that this is created by youth, for youth, and that's kind of like the view that they're going to get. They're going to get it through the views aspect instead of the police.
Yes. Yay. That's I love that about this project, right? Because, and you guys can affirm this, right? I did not influence what you came up with, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Please say that. Say it verbally, because I'll need this recording to take to the police and other places when they think, oh yeah, you did that. Nope. I gave you information. You guys decided what the tools were going to be.
Correct.
Right.
Right. Yes.
Right.
Any last words you want to say?
Well, part of our process for getting to this point and knowing what our tool was having people come in and talk about issues of racism, and we had people come in and talk about all sorts of social justice issues.
Yes.
So that brings me to intersectionality,
mm-hmm.
where, like, if you're a disabled Black lesbian, how your interactions with the police are different from if you're a white straight woman, even.
That's right.
So we have to acknowledge that race is important, but it's not just race.
Mm-hmm.
Race is the things that we see, mm-hmm. so they are very prevalent. But then when you start interacting with those police, things come up that are about, you know, other identities that are really important.
Yes.
And when you're young, you're figuring those things out. You
That's
have
right.
no idea who you are.
That's right.
Or you have a very vague idea, or it just changed last week, blah, blah,
right,
blah.
Right, right.
But those things are important, and they need to be acknowledged.
Absolutely.
And again, having youth work on this, mm-hmm. it empowers us to know who we are, mm-hmm. what we care about, mm-hmm. and what we need to know to be safe in the world.
Wonderful, wonderful. Ready?
Yeah, well, I think my biggest advice and my biggest takeaway from this is that, like Anthony said, this is created by youth, by teenagers, for young people, especially people who are 14, 15, just entering high school and who mm-hmm. don't really know what to expect. And so I think that just having this created by us is kind of creating this voice for them, because if we're going around the city and talking to these people and making this book with resources in it, mm-hmm. it kind of inspires youth to do the same thing. And that's what we want to do. We want to inspire youth and empower them and make them feel more confident, mm-hmm. and especially to take this back to their schools.
Right.
If they can start something and talk to, you know, people who are in power at their schools to do something like this, it kind of creates this ripple effect where it's like it's slowly spreading out and the word is getting around, and, you know, people are starting to feel more safe because they know their rights and they know what they need to do in case they encounter a police officer. And that's really our goal, mm-hmm. is to make them feel safe and confident and empowered. So I think that just trying to do your best to spread the word and make this something that can really empower you and the people around you is really important.
Very cool. And last but not least, Anthony.
I think it's really important to recognize that people like us are not a new phenomena. Mm-hmm. People have been working towards justice for all for centuries. With that in mind, I think it's important that people who are listening to this and see what we're doing don't kind of brush their hands off and say, okay, well, somebody else is handling it.
Right.
Right, it's done. And that's not the case. We're going to do our part and keep it going as long as we can. But we shouldn't be doing this alone. Everyone has a responsibility, a call to action, to do something, to say something, and to hold police accountable for the things that they're doing on a daily basis. I just don't want people to check out. I want people to be involved. I want people to let it all in and do something about it.
Excellent. And I just want to tell you all, I am so proud that I had the honor to work with you this summer. This is probably the best job I've ever had. I look forward to see what comes next. I am Joanne Hardesty. This has been Voices from the Edge. See you next week, same time, same place, same station. Thank you, Steve, for being the fabulous engineer you are. Have a great day, folks. See you next week.
This is KBOO Portland. It's coming up on 9 o'clock, at which time we will have, at which time Per Fagring sits in for a special edition of Press Watch and takes you up to the 10 o'clock hour with Fight the Empire with guest Dennis Lazar. about Russia's motivations in interfering in American politics. At 10 on the Heather McCoy Show, Heather talks to Prost America writer Gwen DeFries about the next Thorns game and the upcoming Women's World Cup. She also talks to Jason Scott of LGBT Fresno to talk about what life is like for LGBT people who live in more conservative areas of our country. At 11, Between the Covers features an interview with Sophia Shalmiyev about her new memoir, Mother Winter. At 11:30, Black Book Talk with your hosts, Patricia Welch, O.B. Hill, and Emma Jackson Ford. All of this can happen only through the auspices, through the generosity of the members of the KBOO Foundation. Those listeners not yet members of the KBOO Foundation can remedy that oversight at kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate. Stay tuned now for Press Watch Empire Fighting Special Conglomeration Program.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, unless otherwise noted. There will be an extra board meeting this month on Monday, June 10th at 6 p.m.
Well, good morning. This is Press Watch. Pierre Fograng. I'm filling in for Teresa, who is away on a little vacation trip. And we could talk about, since this is Press Watch, we might start out by mentioning, talking about the fate of newspapers. Newspapers seem to be going broke all over the country these days. Various reasons have been given. One is that they have lost their a lot of their classified ads, which is a big money maker. And in general, they're being replaced. We're getting our news.